Hey everybody, welcome back. It's a Some Dumb Gaijin podcast with your host and Some Dumb Gaijin, JJ. And today on my podcast, I have a special guest, another comedian, another guy named JJ, and another Canuck. This guy is great. I met him in Japan. We did some stand-up together, and I really wanted to know this guy more. At first, I was kind of like, who's this motherfucker with the same name? And I'm sure he thought the same thing. But then when I met him, I realized he was a great guy. I don't mind sharing my name. And I just really wanted to learn more of this guy. I found out he lived in Taiwan. I found out he lived in China. And then he came to Japan and he did comedy in all of them. This guy's just really great, really interesting, lived an amazing life. And I really enjoyed talking to him. So I hope all of you enjoy too. Okay, let's check it out.
All right. How we doing? Oh my God.
Yeah, it's been a while. I was so happy that you contacted me, and because I wanted to talk to you more when we were in Japan, and we never really got the chance. We're always in and out in the clubs. How you doing, JJ?
Well, yeah, there wasn't much comedy when we were in Japan, and there's not much comedy here in Canada. I mean, what can you say? It's the pandemic.
I know. Is that the what do we have? Not the Sky Tree, the needle in the back of you?
That's the CN Tower. It's quite a famous icon in Canada. You may have heard of it before.
Somewhere before?
Yeah.
You're right downtown Toronto, huh?
I'm in the core, but like, no, I mean, it's if I want to get to the office buildings, it's about a 10-minute bike ride. So yeah, quite enjoy it. It's about the same. I live in about the same amount of space that I do when I was in Japan. But it's a bit more comfortable because, you know, we've got a view and friends and family and stuff. I can drive a car. That's great.
How was your move back? Did you have problems with going through the quarantine and all that?
Yeah, well, it was, I get a feeling that your move back was a little bit more spontaneous. Mine was, mine was planned. We planned it for years, essentially. And we had, my wife had her permanent resident visa. And then we let that pass because there was this pandemic that showed up, and around the same time we found out we were having a kid. So we decided to stay in Japan and have the kid. And then we had a little trouble getting back because when you get a permanent resident visa overseas, which my wife needed, once the eligibility is up, you have to reapply. So we emailed the government. We said, look, we're not going to make it before the eligibilities. It's pandemic. We're having a kid. They're like, no problem. Just contact us when you're ready. And so we did. And we had to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And there was a lot of uncertainty. But meanwhile, what we decided was we were just going to set a date to move out of our apartment. And then we were just going to kick it in Japan until like we got the notification that we could enter again.
Okay.
And that came while we'd already left our apartment, but we were on our, you know, epic 2-week van trip around Japan, final van trip. And then the trip home was a pain in the ass. I had to do a COVID test for me, my wife, and my kid. And we had to fly from like a completely abandoned airport.
Oh, wow.
And the prices were, you know, ridiculously high.
Did you have to stay in the hotel?
The quarantine hotel?
Yeah.
We did the quarantine hotel in Vancouver. And that was like okay because we had to be in the house for 2 weeks anyway. So we did 3 days in Vancouver. Then we got to get on a plane and fly to Toronto. And so it wasn't like it sort of broke up the week a little bit. And quarantining wasn't so bad because, you know, you're just so jet lagged and beat up when you like do something big like that.
Oh, yes.
And like it kind of gave us a chance to just chill out a little bit. I didn't like having to pay almost $2,000 to stay in a hotel for 3 days and eat terrible food.
Yeah, that's why I skipped it, right? That's why I rushed to get back. I saw them coming out with the hotel quarantine. I was like, fuck that. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, so I know a couple people that slipped in right before that. I didn't enjoy doing that. I didn't enjoy kind of the amount of money that it took to get home.
Yeah.
All things, you know, we sort of did it kind of the right way. One thing that we did really badly is we brought a lot of bags, like a lot. We get to Vancouver and it's a ghost town, absolute ghost town.
Oh, wow.
Everyone, like everyone that we saw in the baggage area, everyone that we saw in immigration, all those people were on our flight. Like there was nobody else. And
yeah, me too. I think
we had to go and get tested, and then they gave us kits to take with us. Then we had to get tested like 10 days later.
Oh, wow.
But to me, the real shock, like the real rude awakening was I took a dump in the Vancouver airport. And I'm just sitting there going like, why is the stall door so high? Like, why does this bathroom feel, everything about it felt wrong. And I didn't have the assist from the washlet, from the Toto.
Oh, I know. And
as I was taking a dump, I basically pulled out my phone, connected to Vancouver airport, like Wi-Fi, and started shopping for a washlet. It's the first thing I did. Literally,
I still need to get one too. It's like the most important, like the biggest thing I miss from Japan. My mom's like, oh, we use baby wipes here. I was like, no, it's not the same as having water blown up.
You know, I shopped around. I found a well-reviewed one that was like $280, but I didn't know the brand. So I went with the cheapest Toto. It doesn't have the filter for the smells. It doesn't have the air dryer for your butt. It's got everything else. It's the A100. It's been lovely. But even that was a pain in the ass. It took 3 weeks to arrive. And in that 3 weeks, I was so chafed. I felt wrong. Every day I felt like something was off. Like the world was in color, but I was in black and white. Like it was just wrong.
It's like the greatest invention ever.
Yeah, and then I get it, and I don't know how to install it. I gotta like look up YouTubes and things. I don't have the right tools. I gotta call my dad over. Then we realized that we were missing something, so we had to come back. Like I had it, and I wasn't able to install it for a week, and it was like the worst week of my life. But I'm lucky because I landed in Toronto. I had like a house waiting for me. It was like full of everything that I needed. I wrote down a list of what I needed, so that was awesome. And that's
how do you like being back?
Friends and family and stuff. Yeah.
Do you miss Japan at all, or are you glad you're back?
You know, when I left Taiwan and I went to China, I kept comparing everything to Taiwan. When I was in China and I moved to Japan, people will tell you, like if they do a roast about me, it's like every second joke. It's like this one time in China. But I arrived here and like, I don't know, I'm totally at peace with it. I miss the toilets. I miss the kombinis like crazy.
Oh, I know.
Like I missed like crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, this last year we weren't doing much. So I don't like, I'm not missing the comedy there and I'm not missing the comedy here because I just haven't done it for a year. It took like, you know, 2-3 months to get over the addiction. And I'm not like comedy's not my primary form of income. Yeah. So if you're a comedian and it's your form of income and it's your identity, like it's everything, right? And it's an addiction. But for me, my business increased during the pandemic. And so after the first 2 or 3 months of not doing comedy, I did a few book shows for BJ. And then it was like, I was right back into it. It was like a drug addiction.
So. Yeah. Well, and I mean, I remember.
So arriving here, I expected I'd love to be able to go hit the clubs here, but I can't. So.
Yeah. When I moved back from Japan, I saw that Vancouver and BC was doing good. So I thought, oh yeah, by the time I move, all the clubs will be open and I'm going to be sitting here and then Japan's going to get hit by the wave. And I'll be like, yeah, I made the right decision. Meanwhile, Japan's still open, although it seems like it's getting crazy. And
okay. Speaking of the right decision, I got to ask you a question. Right?
Yeah.
So you said on the last podcast that you were, your agency wanted you to come back to do some comedy in Japan or in Japanese.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here going, why wouldn't you do that? Like why, if you're being offered gainful employment, like the opportunity to eat off of comedy instead of digging a financial hole or possibly your financial grave, how are you not already back? Like you still have residency. You can still get back into the country. How are you not there? Like, why didn't you leave the second they gave you an email?
It's a kind of a long story, right? So when I first came to Japan and stuff, I wanted to get into a little bit of acting, a little bit of comedy, but I was stuck in Guma Prefecture when I came back the first time.
Right.
And so, you know,
I like the only foreigner there.
Pretty much. But so my whole goal was to get down to Tokyo and it took me 2 years. And by the time I got down there and I started stand up, I didn't like the scene in Tokyo at first.
When was this?
2015. And there was a lot of people and there was kind of a big scene, but I forget who it was, but someone was really rude after my set and it turned me off. So I was like, okay, screw it. I also like Japanese comedy.
No, no, come on. You gotta be able to figure out who was that?
I can't remember who it was. I don't think they're still there.
Did they have an English accent?
No.
Okay.
Anyways, but my set did good and I was proud of myself. I was like, man, it's been so long since I did English comedy. I'm like, this is great. I'm going to start doing this. And the guy came up.
Did you do English comedy in Canada?
Yeah, a little bit. Mostly like small things. I never hit up the clubs or anything because I was a martial arts guy. I always did martial arts. And anyway, so it turned me off. And then I went into Japanese comedy, which I didn't think I could do. And people were encouraging me. And I got into Sony Music and I got my Mansai partner and it was going great. But the thing about Japanese comedy, same with the entertainment world in Japan, is there's only so far they'll let you get as a foreigner. And I thought I broke that and I thought I could do good. But there's a wall that they never let you. And it's been, whatever, 100 years of Japanese entertainment and no white person ever made it.
So, but you said that recently you've been contacted.
Yeah, yeah. They emailed me and they said, oh, we want you to come back. We have some shows. But I mean, you know, you do a TV show. They don't push you. Like, they're not putting your Twitter and your Instagram on the bottom and pushing you as a talent. It's just work. And to me, I was done with just
doing work. So it's not quite lucrative enough? Like,
yeah.
Like, you could, as long as you're getting paid to do something in entertainment, then you hit up the mics, you know, get on some book shows. You know, start building your act, right? And then you can take that to Austin or wherever else you want to go, you know?
Not with Japanese comedy though. That's just Japan. But
you do the English and the Japanese at the same time or whatever, right?
Oh yeah, true. But I wanted to be around more with English comedy too. I wanted to be more around like-minded people. I wanted more open mics because you saw me do comedy. I need work and I need to learn from other people. You got fireworks going off in the background, man. You got one of the best Zoom sets in the world, I think.
Well, it's Victoria Day, so it's a holiday here in Canada.
Which
they call May 2-4 here, because a case of beer is a 2-4, and it's a big drinking weekend. And when I was in Quebec, it was officially known as Fête de la Reine, which just means the Queen's holiday. And I think it's also sometimes they just switch it out for the festival of Dollar des Armeaux.
Okay.
With a French, like, I don't know, fur trader or something like that. And he got into it with the Indians or something. I don't know. But they,
yeah.
So yeah, it's a holiday weekend. It's Monday. We had a good time. We did not, we hung out with people in their backyard, which technically I don't think is allowed until June 2nd. But, you know, come at me, bro. Doug Ford, come at me. Come at me, bro. So you came home to do comedy.
Yeah.
There's no comedy.
No.
So do you like go outside to a tree and then just like smack your head against it? Or like, do you like, are you cutting? Like what?
Me now I can write. So I spent five plus hours a day. No, I mean, it really sucked. I thought it'd be done by now. But to me, you know, you take a bad situation, you make the best you can. I'm writing so much material. I got maybe 5 hours of stand-up, which means probably 20 good minutes.
Yeah, you're going to have to whittle that down.
It's all just writing. You never know until you do it.
They're doing stand-up in the U.S. Why aren't you there? How come you're not in Austin, bro?
I'm thinking about it. I'm really thinking about it. But I don't know. I think I might try out Vancouver for a bit and then probably hit up Toronto.
Vancouver's more expensive than Austin. Your money will burn faster. Just go straight to Japan, man. Do some dumb gaijin there. Why did you keep the name?
Because I like it. That's all I kind of felt like when I was there is some dumb gaijin.
All right. So you're in Japan. You're working at an agency, right?
Yeah. Sony.
You're working at Sony. Is that the same as like Sony?
Yep, Sony Music, but they have their own branch of comedy as well on there.
Did you ever get censored?
No. They were letting me do a lot of wild stuff on late night TV, but the other problem was me and my comedy partner, we had different ideas.
Okay.
everyone's trying to be like downtown, all Japanese comedy was the same, and there was no progression. I was like, I got this idea, let's do it. Oh no, that's not how we do it in Japan. It's like, we're doing something new, let's do it. And he's, you know, Japanese, very straight-minded. And COVID happened and he went crazy, so we had to
he went crazy, man.
He when we first had the lockdown in Tokyo, he was researching on the internet. He was like, oh my god, Hollywood vampires are eating children, you know, blood orgies. And I was like, dude, you know that's fake shit. And he showed like the famous picture online with, what was his name, Leonardo DiCaprio with his jar of a baby. And he's like, look, they have like unborn children and they're doing satanic rituals. And I was like, dude, that's from a museum. It's fake. Like, I've seen that before. And he just wouldn't believe me. He went batshit crazy. And I got offered solo gigs by Sony. And then I was getting contact by this pro wrestling Japanese thing. And I had stuff to do, but.
Wait, hold on. You turned down pro wrestling?
Well, before Corona hit, I was doing this.
Hey, you're a grappler, right? Right? You're a grappler?
No, but it's pro wrestling comedy, which is kind of cool. But. Yeah,
what I'm saying is, obviously it's a different skill set, but you'd probably be able to learn it faster than like most people, right? Because you've spent a ton of time on the mat, right? The physicality, right? There's got to be some crossover, and it's comedy. Why would you not have done this? This doesn't make sense to me.
I know. People ask me that, but I just feel that the next step is English comedy, and I got an idea that I want to do.
So what you're telling me is you only make bad decisions.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's bad. I'm still thinking. You're talking about this month opening up in BC.
Definitely fireworks going off right now.
Yeah.
And these are not municipal fireworks. Someone just setting out. This is hundreds of dollars worth of fireworks.
This is an interesting Zoom call, man.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got this Manzai partner. Is this your long-term Manzai partner, or is it like a new Manzai partner? Because I think I heard somewhere that you had like a big fight with a dude.
Yeah, that was him. But we were together for like 3 years.
Okay, so you had a big fight with him after a TV show.
No, that was Corona.
Contest or something? Was it a contest? And then Corona happened, or this was during Corona?
The fight was kind of for the past 6 months before we broke up, because the ideas that were different. And it was really...
Did you guys decide to like see other comics or like, you know?
Well, he went crazy. Like right now he's doing a YouTube channel with puppets. Like he's trying to do Manzai comedy by himself with a puppet. Let's put it that way.
I mean, what I want to know is he getting views? Because if he's getting views, I'm going to respect the hustle, you know?
Me and him did a YouTube channel together, and we're paying for advertisement on YouTube. And the most views we got was like 3,000 views. And I was like, dude, I think our best idea is to introduce Japanese comedy to people abroad. And he never wanted to do it. Then when we separated,
why, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Is sure. Japanese comedy fun?
Is Japanese comedy fun?
Many people say, not at all.
Hold on,
I don't know. I don't speak Japanese. I was there for 4 or 5 years. Unlike most people, I arrived in Japan as a fully formed adult who'd already spent many years in Asia. So I didn't come with any sense of wonder or any sense of excitement. I was there because it was my family's job, my wife's job. And I knew going in that I was going to try and do comedy. And I was obviously going to try and do cool stuff, go on fun trips, go to onsens and stuff. But I was never like 100, I was never like in it, you know. And I have a lot of friends, comedian friends, who make tons of fun of me because I don't know anything in Japanese, like nothing, zero. Like I can't even say hello. And
oh, come on, you can say konnichiwa.
Yeah, but I can say konnichiwa. But okay, you know how you say thank you and there's like the arigato and then there's like something that comes after that?
Yeah.
I never even bothered to learn that.
The gozaimasu.
Yeah. At my going away show, we did a bit of a roast. It was really funny. Like one of the comedians made this joke. He's like, this is how bad he is at Japanese, that he doesn't know, how little he's integrated, that no one's ever said, hey, wow, your chopsticks are so good, right? Like you're so good at chopsticks. And like the word that he used, what's chopsticks in
Hashi.
Yeah. And I was like, what's that? And like I didn't even know what chopsticks were, which was basically the punchline, and everyone laughed. And I'm the only person in the room who didn't get the joke that was about me, because I didn't know what hashi were. So I don't have any, I don't know anything about Japanese comedy, except this one time we were doing Hanami, which for those of you who haven't spent time in Japan, that is when you get together, get really smashed under cherry blossom. So it's kind of a spring thing. It's a new year. It's a new academic year. Lots of jobs started around that time. And basically it's kind of like the 4th of July. Yeah. It's and a little bit like the holiday that we have today in Canada. It's a drinking holiday. So you know how we do like barbecues and fireworks? Well, in Japan, they do the fireworks later on in the year. They do it like spread out over the summer, different towns. But they do, everyone gets smashed and really rapey around this time of year. And I remember some dude came up and he did, he was doing physical comedy. Mm. And like my friend, the very, very talented Vinay Murthy, was explaining what was happening. He's like, this guy's coming, he's talking about his gags, and he's doing like this crazy physical comedy. And it was one of the most off-putting things I'd ever seen in my life. So like, is man's eye even entered? Like, is it, like, does it, like, is it any, like, defend it? Cause I've only heard bad things.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of foreigners don't get Japanese comedy, but a handful of them do. And I started watching it way before I went to Japan. So over 10, 12 years.
Wait, are you a weeb?
No, definitely not. No. But I love my two things about Japan. Like, a lot of people come because of anime or manga or whatever. I came because of martial arts and comedy. Those are my two big things.
And I grew up with Japanese. You came to Japan to study with Brazilians. Hmm? That makes sense.
What?
You came to Japan to study with Brazilians? That makes sense.
Well, actually, jiu-jitsu is originally Japanese.
Yeah.
But I did do club ball with Brazilians, yeah.
You did what?
My jiu-jitsu main club in Guma was all Brazilians. Two Japanese people.
Do you miss your comedy partner? You know, like, do you miss, he's gone off the deep end, he's not the same person. Do you miss him?
I don't miss him, but I do miss Manzai. Like, I didn't want to do solo comedy. I felt that Manzai is the root of Japanese comedy, and that two-person comedy is more like Abbott and Costello, which was early English comedy, slapstick English comedy.
If you guys, could you guys have, like, you know, run a train on the same girl, or like, you know, like how, you know, how that
We're pretty close. For the whole time, I was wondering what's going on with him, because Japanese comedians, like foreign comedians too, here in the West, we're pretty much horn dogs right after the set, you know? And he wasn't. He had a bunch of old lady fans that came to our shows, and you'd think that would be bad, but they actually were the best tippers and stuff. So after a comedy show, we would collect like donations kind of. So we were making over $100 a night. It was insane. We're making more money than I would even in Canada. I mean, $100 a night ain't bad. For not famous, but our show was right down Harajuku. And this is another whole different story I won't get into, but we had our own theater on Harajuku, and I was the Thursday leader, but we would go on other days. But every 7 Manzai teams had their own day, and we had Thursday. We're leaders every week in Harajuku. So did everyone
knew us. Did you have a name for your fans? Like, were they the JJ Army or something?
No, no. No, no, no. But a lot of, like, getting fans in Japanese comedy is probably harder than Western comedy as well. And luckily, when I made my Manzai partner, he had this whole following because he did Butai, Japanese theater. So we had regular 10 customers that would come to every show. Yeah, it was a sweet deal. But in the end, creatively, he wasn't taking the risk I thought needed to be taken. And Japanese comedy is kind of dying and not being what it used to be. And I think stand-up comedy is now going into a new wave.
I think it's been on a wave for a very long time, but it's also very crowded, right? There's a lot trying to be gainfully employed comedians, and it's a very long, hard road.
Yeah. But I mean, you did amazing, man. Like, when I started English stand-up again, and everyone's like, oh God, you know, you're the second JG. I'm like, fuck, is this guy gonna hate me? And then I saw your set and I was like, yeah, this guy's miles ahead of me.
But it's crazy that we both left at this like nearly the same time as well. And we went,
yeah.
But you're in Kelowna?
Right now I'm in Penticton.
Okay, Penticton. Oh. Is it, that's where the serial killing happened. Pig farmer.
No, that's Picton. That's the name of the guy, Picton. He's from Vancouver.
You guys have a lot of serial killers out there.
What? No way. Yeah. Toronto's way more. Yeah, gangs and shit.
Gangs, but guys, I'm talking about legit just serial killers.
Probably. Vancouver's the more creative.
Yeah. It's discipline to be a serial killer.
Yeah.
Okay, so you come back here. You're like, I gotta get out. I gotta get there before they swing the door shut. They're about to introduce Hotel Quarantine, but I'm sure there's still comedy. Did you like check
the thing? No, I knew it was closed for quarantine, but BC was, the numbers were going down, and I was like, okay, so it's probably gonna finish, and I can just move to Vancouver and be set. But about a week after I got back, the numbers jumped up again. And yeah, it sucks. But it's given me time to think, because I was thinking Texas, Toronto, Vancouver, LA, or New York. So I have friends in New York. He said he works at UN. He can get me a job doing a tour guide, and I could do comedy there. So that's on the table.
You have a place to stay, and you're gainfully employed. Yeah. I mean, yeah, do it, right?
But at the same time, I feel like we got to put Canada on the map too. You know, like most Canadian comedians go to Ontario, like Norm Macdonald, Jim Carrey, whatever. And then you go to Montreal, do Just for Laughs, and then everyone just moves over to the US, right?
Well, if you're smart, yeah. And there's a reason for that. It's very, unless you're a French language comedian, which they have their own thing going on, and they can make really good livings. They can fill packed theaters and stuff.
Oh, damn.
Dates are far, few and far between. So you have about half the clubs are in one chain. You're either in that chain or you're not. Mm-hmm. Then when you do a tour, you're going to do room here, and then you got to drive to another city that's 4 or 5 hours away. So you're stringing shows from coast to coast, and it's a very, very long, hard road, and there's not that much opportunity. The US is just a much bigger market. Mm-hmm. And if you're talented, the cream will rise to the top. There are an enormous number of extremely talented people here, but it's tough to catch a break. You see, you know, I talked to my friends in LA, you know, the ones who do like roast battle and kind of like who are more aligned with the communities that I'm in, right? That I would count as friends. They sometimes are able to pull down other opportunities that are not necessarily exclusively stand-up comedy. So yeah. They might, there's more writing gigs, right? Stuff like that. So there's kind of like more opportunity to be a gainfully employed comedian who's able to eat off of like creative work than here, where you have media concentration and you have relatively few opportunities. So, you know, if you have the biggest market in the world at your disposal, there's nothing wrong with doing it.
True.
That being said, there are comedians who are able to do it, who are able to like successfully build a following here in Canada and then take that following across the country. A lot of them do it through, like, if you're on the right CBC show, then you can kind of like get people know who you are across the country and you can fill rooms, but it's not an easy thing to do.
Well, what do you think about now?
You can also start doing like videos and sketches that can get you popular, like, you know, across the world, you know?
Yeah. That's really, what I was gonna ask you.
There's a New York, there's a kind of person who just prefers being in New York, right? There's a, you know, New York. Have you ever been?
No.
I mean, it's incredible.
That's kind of why.
Absolutely incredible. If you can get
Tokyo, right?
Working as a, yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's an incredible city. It's not, I mean, I would argue that Tokyo's better in most ways, but Tokyo's not the capital of Earth, whereas New York, if there is one country that could lay claim to that title, it would definitely be New York, you know, 99 times out of 100.
Do you think so? More than LA?
Capital of Earth? Literally, the UN is in New York. I hear people from London saying it's the comedy capital of the world. I will dispute that. But some, you know, some of their comedians do scale right across Europe. Comedy Store is a wonderful place.
That's kind of a dream. Like, I love Kinnison and a lot of the people that came out of the Comedy Store, and just to perform there once would be my dream one day.
Well, it's not that difficult to perform at the Comedy Store because people book shows. Like, other promoters have shows there. Hmm. I was offered a lot. The only time I ever went, I just went one night just to check it out. I did Comedy Chaos, which is Sam Tripoli's show, who I knew because he came and did, because I opened for him in China.
That's awesome. And you went to the Comedy Store?
Yeah. And then I went upstairs and I did Roast Battle, and I'd already been talking with people there to bring him out to Tokyo.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was fun. And I got offered to do some spots because people there who were running shows knew me, and I hadn't done comedy in like a month, and I was just on vacation. It was just me and my daughter staying at my brother's house. Mm. And I wasn't hot. Like, I wasn't, I wasn't like in the zone.
The gears weren't oiled.
Like, I was just like, yeah, you know, whatever, maybe another time. But it's a great club. It's a really good club. And,
yeah, I'd love.
There's so much like inherited energy there.
Mm.
But at the same time, there's a big difference between getting on some shows that are booked by like outside promoters and getting passed. And, you know, it's like, I'm good at hockey. You're not always going to get a chance to play on the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, for sure.
So Austin, man, that's where it's at. You should go. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I was so on board with Austin until recently. I was listening to like Bill Burr and Joey Diaz talk about it a bit. And they were kind of like just saying, it's hot as hell. There's a weird group of people there. If it was Houston, Texas, like it would be different, but Austin is just a different vibe, he was saying.
Yeah. Okay. So,
and I don't know much.
Bill Burr, who's like old and angry, right? And he lives in New Jersey. Argo, yeah. Like, yeah, their style of life is so radically different from yours. I would say that, like, I don't really like Austin. I wouldn't, their word for it. You know, everyone says Austin's an incredible city. I've never been, but it's always been like, people always say unbelievably incredible things about Austin. I mean, it's a city, it's the weirdest city in Texas. I think it would be fantastic. You just go give it a try, right? But New York, do it.
Yeah, New York is the biggest possibility. That guy offered me a job at UN during tours, so I know I have a job and then a place to stage that I'll like find a place. So that's really cool. And that guy actually was a friend of a YouTuber that ended up liking some of my comedy and YouTube channel. And that's how I met him.
He's a member of the JJ Army.
I don't even want to say that. I make fun of BTS. Were you there? No, you weren't there that one set. I did a thing on BTS, and then I think Kat was in there.
BTS, the Korean.
Yeah. Making fun of them. And I was like, something BTS. And then Kat was like, oh, BTS. And then I just shat on them. And her face just changed completely.
Who?
I think Kat was her name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right, so, yeah.
Okay, so of all the times that you went to open mics and stuff in Japan, yeah, who was the funniest?
I really liked your set. And what's the one guy's name, too? I think he's
Paul Short.
Short. Short, kind of stocky. I think he wasn't from America. I think he was from Africa, actually.
Evans,
yeah. Evans blew me away.
If you saw Evans poorly, he's gonna be very hurt.
What?
Oh, it's stocky.
No, I don't think he was stocky. I meant stocky like big. And I mean, I really respected BJ. He did something I thought of like years ago, and he did it so good, doing actually stand-up in Japanese. A lot of respect for BJ.
Well, he doesn't, I mean, BJ also, so he helped really build the English scene, but they also do like a lot of shows in Japanese.
And Alex, love Alex.
Yeah.
I was so sad when I started up again, he moved back to England. Same shit, and he got caught in the corona mess.
I mean, you just thought he was a nice guy, or you thought he was extremely funny?
He was a nice guy. He was extremely funny. And he was one of the reasons that I was like, and I never told him this, but he was one of the reasons that I was like, you know what? I'm going to give English stand up another try.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll be very excited to hear that.
Yeah. I don't think I ever told him.
There's a lot of fireworks going off. So I have Lake Ontario, which is just a 10 minute bike ride this way. And I can actually see like multiple, like, so there's probably there's people down on what's called Cherry Beach, which is actually quite nice. Toronto is like way prettier than I expected. And it's like, I can actually see like multiple, reminds me a little bit of Shanghai. Now in China, they've done a very good job in recent years of stopping this practice. But during Chinese New Year, so starting at about 9 or 10 o'clock, it just starts being like bang, bang, and then firecrackers. And then it just starts speeding up as you get closer to midnight. First night of Chinese New Year, just, you know, the biggest holiday in the world, biggest migration of people.
Yeah. They do it good.
What happens is around midnight, everyone lets off fireworks. It's like, good luck. I don't know. There's a ritual. When I mean everyone lets off fireworks, I mean, people go by an insane amount of fireworks, like boxes with cement bottoms, where the actual thing will go up 20 stories in the air and explode. So if you're in a 20 story building, you're standing outside, you'll actually have fireworks going up off in your face. And then it doesn't actually stop for 4 days. And then on the fourth day, like, it starts again, because that's when they like honor the money god or something. I'm not 100% sure. But when you look, if you actually go and you search YouTube, like crazy fireworks Shanghai, no matter where you are, all you can see is fireworks, all you can hear is fireworks, and all you can smell is fireworks. And when you wake up the next morning, you there's actually like people brooming, like push brooming casings, as if it was like there's a layer of it. And I don't think you can possibly imagine what it'd be like to like look out over a panorama and actually just see nothing but fireworks going off, because it's going off at every intersection. I went to my first night of Chinese New Year in China. I went to a club called Guandi, which was in a park in Fuxing Park, which is actually famous because that's the park that had the sign that said like no dogs or Chinese like in this park. And it became really famous, a rallying cry, like in China. It helped spawn like a rebellion. And Bruce Lee actually like chops a sign that was like based on that sign in one of his movies, like no dogs or China. And so there was a nightclub in the park, and some friends of mine were DJing there. And I went to that park, and they actually had bought 66,000 fireworks, like M80 size fireworks, in giant strips. Like if you ever seen dominoes that go out, and they had like a whole bunch of bouncers with fire extinguisher. And I'm like, the stuff that I was taking that night, like, just started hitting. And they light this thing off, and it's like, bah, 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 bah. And like, I look down, and it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. And then I look up, and because I'm in a park, I don't have like buildings in my face like this. So I'm getting 360 degrees around, and I look up, and it's like nothing but just fireworks as far as I can see. And I'm like, my God, this is the craziest. And I remember that night, like, we just went from like place to place to place, and we'd get in a cab, and cabs would be like swerving around people that just blowing up stuff in the streets. And like, I've never ever experienced anything like that. And the first year that my daughter was born, so this is like the 2015, so it would have been the Chinese New Year of 2016, they just shut it down. They sent like text messages to everyone, no fireworks, like, you're going to jail, nothing within the inner ring roads. And like, they just shut it down. They had like people checking like on every street, and it went from like the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life, obviously a breathing hazard, obviously dogs, like, it was so cool, to just like, it didn't exist. And you couldn't replicate that experience anywhere. I remember one year I took a train from Beijing during Chinese New Year on the fourth night, not even the first night where it's the craziest. So it's a 12-hour ride. It leaves at 7:30 at night. It arrives 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I remember like looking out, and I'm just going, like, we're just, you know, we're traveling at 100, 200 kilometers an hour. And throughout the night, you could just look out the window and see fireworks. I like, in one blink of an eye, I've seen more, like, in, I just look like this, I would see more fireworks going off than everyone I've ever met. All the fireworks you've ever seen, and everyone you've ever met in your life has seen, put together, would be a blink of an eye on Chinese New Year. And so just like, I would look forward to that night so much. And you'd get together with friends like it was the Super Bowl, and you're like, where are you doing the fireworks? Like, where are you doing it? And like, you'd try and congregate. Like, I would basically like people, I would like being in someone's apartment where you had like a bit of a view. So you could see, and it didn't matter what the view was. It didn't have to be sweeping, because intersections would just be lighting up and you just hear all the time. And I can't, those guys are balling. There's a lot, there's people, really people going on fireworks out on Cherry Beach. That is nuts.
Well, why did you go to China again? What was your decision for doing that?
Oh, I always thought that I would go maybe to Asia to teach. I knew people who'd done it. They enjoyed it.
So you didn't do it for comedy?
I actually had friends who did the JET program, because I learned about the JET program. And I talked about the JET program. They went, I never did. And I moved, after university, I moved to Toronto studying my LSATs. So I wanted to be a lawyer. And I said, you know what? I really don't like it here. I had started a company in Montreal. It went tits up. I was with my parents in like the suburbs of Toronto. I just wasn't enjoying myself. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. Went to Japan and teaching. I went to a friend. My friend was working in a cafe. I went in. He goes, yo, go sit next to that guy over there. I sit down. This guy, Bruce McDonald. He sits with me, guys, a little bit older than me. And he's like, so Luke over here tells me that you're planning to go to Japan. Don't. And I'm like, wait, why? He goes, Japan, you'll always be a gaijin. Go to Taiwan. You go to Taiwan, hang out with the Han. You'll like them better. And I was like, wait, what? He's like, you know, because the Chinese are very relationship focused. So you can actually have like relationships with people that like supersede the fact that you guys are from different cultures. And it's like the partying is ridiculous. And it is. The partying in Taiwan is so unbelievable, because, you know, in Taiwan, like girls just, it's so hot. Girls just go to the bar in the city in a bikini top, you know, it's just like, whatever.
Yeah, I heard some crazy stories Taiwan, but
you know, there's a lot of like raves on the beach, like secret parties by waterfalls, and like it's just, you know, it's just a crazy, unbelievable. It's, you know, it's like Japan, but like mixed. It's literally because the Japanese did colonize it, so it's got like a bit of a Japanese ethic. They like Japan. Japan likes Taiwan. I think it's probably the only place in East Asia that the Japanese actually like. And it's so crowded. It's so packed. But it's also kind of carefree, and it's also free, and there's a really cool spirit. It's got great food and all this stuff. And he made a pitch, and I just went to Taiwan, and it was like mind blowing. I never ended up finished studying for my LSATs. 3 or 4 years later, I'm still in Taiwan. I nearly get into a scooter accident, and it was like, it would have been instant death. I was like a split second from instant death. I'm driving down a road, country road. I'm going 100 on my scooter. There's a car, a truck coming the other direction, and another truck just pulls out behind him. So we would have collided at 100 and 100 because he was overtaking. There's no way I would have died. I just sort of leaned to the right. I only had time to like lean to the right and basically like
the truck,
the rear view mirror grazes my ear. And I was like, if I stay here, I'll die. But I want to like learn Chinese. I'm going to go to Shanghai. I visited once. It was like, it was so crazy. My Shanghai experience was so crazy. And I was like, you know, I'm going to go check it out. I'll go there for a year and study. Worst place in China to study, because it's the easiest place to get along in English. And fucking 12 years later, I'm like still there, you know? So.
Oh, wait. So you were in Taiwan for four years?
3 years.
3 years. Then Shanghai for 12?
Yeah.
And then Japan.
I arrived in 2003, in Asia in 2003, and I left in 2021.
Holy shit. Yeah, you were just visiting Japan?
What?
You were just visiting Japan?
Well, it was just my last stop on the way home. My wife's career, she was able to work at the level she wanted to work at famous companies in Japan. And that's like set her up to be able to like work here. But ultimately, this was always our final destination.
Okay. Crazy. And then you were doing comedy in Taiwan and...
No, I didn't start doing comedy until I got to Shanghai. And only recently, I started like the year before my kid was born.
Really? But you have a pretty solid set, I thought. Like, I would have...
The sets you saw me on were rusty. They weren't just rusty. I mean, that was the first or second time I'd done comedy in a year. And I was doing like completely new material. So... I feel like that's a bad reflection, but
even then, I mean, if that's you, rusty, damn.
Well, no, you know, Shanghai was a good place. We were able to get up 3, 4, 5 times a week. We had an incredible comedy club, Shanghai Comedy Club. Shout out to like the guys that set it up, Paulie Barney. And I was able to get like, you know, on showcases fairly early. And I was able to, you know, get my 10 minutes and 15 minutes out like within a year of starting, right? So I was basically, I was doing Friday and Saturday nights, and I got the opportunity to open for like big comics. I got the opportunity to tour, to like fly places to do comedy. And then I started realizing like, if you want those opportunities, you got to build them for yourself. So I started show running and like bringing people out that I liked and then taking them on tour and then, you know, opening for them that way. And it was, you know, it was just my you know, something I was really passionate about. Right. So I got to improve to the level where I would consider myself not incompetent, but not to the level where I would actually consider myself an actual comedian. Right. Yeah. I would reserve that title for people who are almost like exclusively doing comedy.
Mm. But yeah, that's a great experience. I mean, so you knew Troy really well then, right?
Troy is from lived in a completely different part of China. So I didn't meet Troy until he arrived in Setagaya, one subway stop from me. So Troy is like basically like my closest comedy friend. And, but I'd heard good things, right? So he and I probably knew, you know, 30 or 40 people in common, right?
Okay, damn.
A little bit incestuous, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Southern China. So we knew we had a lot of friends in common. And you know, he came very well recommended, and it was fairly clear when he arrived that he was, you know, I would place him, you know, deep inside the top 10 active comedians in Tokyo, he's a very funny guy. I booked him on the last roast battle show that we did before the pandemic, and he went up against Brendan. It was Brendan's first time doing roast battle.
And Brendan.
It was a bit of a mismatch. Brendan did really, really well. And then Troy came from this really weird oblique angle that like nobody was expecting. He went deep into his Twitter and he just started pulling out like stuff that he'd said. And then he had this real cool rhythm where he'd say the date and then he'd read something and then like tag it with a joke. And then so every time he'd step out, he'd pull back and he'd pull the date in. As he was like saying the date, like people started getting excited because they knew it was like another cherry pick tweet. And I just thought it was a really interesting, fresh approach. I think he did really well on that show. And I was excited to do more. It's really annoying that we haven't been able to do any roast battle shows this year because those were so much fun. You know, we sold out every single one of the shows.
Yeah, you can see them on YouTube. I just watched yours a while back ago, just for fun.
That was the one that I did. That was a different style of show. That's actually a show from here, from Toronto. So the Your Hood's a Joke is a Canadian show, and it came across my like YouTube feed, and I thought it was very interesting because it was place versus place, and I thought like this is a fresh format. You know what? I'm just gonna copy it. And then that I lasted about 30 seconds when I was like, wait, okay, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery, but like, why don't I just fucking email the comedian who runs the show? Like, why not just say like I'm planning to like I wanted to say, look, I want to do a show like this. Do you have, like, is there a specific rule set? Is there a specific guideline? And he just said, well, let's do it. Let's do it in Tokyo. You know, they've been chasing a TV gig for a while. It's insane that their show's not on TV. And they wanted to...
getting cut out again.
On to London and Paris, LA. But I would put up the Your Hood's a Joke that we did in Tokyo with like any of those shows.
That's cool, man.
But how about you?
Like
you?
The roast battling?
Sorry, what?
You like the roast battling, huh?
I always did. Yeah, I love the roast battle, and I thought I was very impressed with the comedians in Tokyo that did it. So I feel like there's a lot of people in Tokyo who are really talented, but they're just in Japan. And maybe you know, maybe if they were in New York or in LA or whatever, they'd be gainfully employed. Feature comics or full headliners, you know, they've got the stuff. They're just not in a vibrant enough environment, and they're very, very far from other places, and vacation time is short. They might have families, and so, you know, you give people an opportunity to write for a special show, and you know, they really knocked it out of the park. I mean, that first show, we were just in shock at how good it was, and then the second show was like even crazier.
Yeah,
and then of course I got really lucky because I hooked up and he, but he's also like a really talented technical guy and producer. And he sort of like, he was really funny because he would show up and he'd already have like the notes about like what I'm supposed to say. And he'd already have like solved technical problems that I didn't know existed. Mm. And we had the video producer, Tom, like basically had a bunch of really talented people, people working the door, people working, they were all better at what they do than like I was. And so they worked together. And I think that was just because the show was so much fun. People wanted to be involved with it. Right. But it's sad that we didn't get to do any more this year. We'll do another one next year. So we'll come back and do Your Hood's a Joke when everything opens up. But
you're going to do it back in Tokyo again?
Yeah. We'll do it in Tokyo. I mean, the show runs here monthly at Yuck Yucks, the biggest Yuck Yucks in the country.
Oh, damn.
But the Tokyo show is like annual, you know, and I'd like to keep it going.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing I was debating too, is there's Yuck Yucks now in Vancouver. There's one in Abbotsford of all places, which if you don't know, is basically like countryside Vancouver.
Right.
And then there's the Toronto. And then I think we have one more somewhere, right?
Oh, there's tons of Yuck Yucks. Just in Toronto, there's like, you know, in the GTA.
I mean, like the big ones.
Well, the real shame is that it was the other room in Vancouver was the one that everyone liked. It was a basement.
Oh, underneath the hotel, right?
Yeah, that one. I mean, that's a killer room. I've been to a couple shows there. Yeah. That's a great club, and I don't
know. They closed down now because I think they moved.
I mean, that was incredible. That was a great show, and then the way like, I mean, it was a full size comedy club, but you're still like waiting in the hallway to get into the show and everything, and so it's like. There's like a bit of discomfort, which is sort of important for comedy as well. I think that's a top tier club that you could put up against most clubs anywhere.
So you've done both then, kind of Vancouver scene and the Toronto scene.
No, Vancouver, I just have friends there.
Oh, so, okay.
Like when I did the quarantine, you know, I had, I got off the plane and I was in the quarantine hotel and I was in a hotel that like didn't care. They weren't like, oh, a guard will escort you for your daily walk to like our special area. It was right downtown. And it was like, there was a door and they're like, yeah, just like put a brick in the exit and go up the back. And there was no one watching. So I basically had a friend roll in and, you know, bring my kids some Timbits and like wife some fruit and, you know, like a bottle of wine and like a bag of vegetables and stuff.
The COVID situation here is ridiculous, man. Like when I came into the country, they said, show us your proof of a negative COVID test, right? And I had it in Japanese because I did the cheap place. And she's like,
that doesn't work in English. Literally, I mean, you should have known better. Come on.
I'll tell a long story short. So I got my negative corona test. And then I go in there, they go, oh, it's in Japanese. We can't read it. Can you please translate it? And I was like, well, what do you want me to do? Write it down on a pen and paper? Or can I just throw it in Google Translate? Like, oh yeah, whatever's fine. So, okay, so I put it into Google Translate. I know Japanese, I could obviously change it if I wanted to, but I put it in Google Translate and then show her the English. She doesn't even fucking look at it. It's like, okay, come in. But my main point was just, they just waved you through. They were just like, oh, can you translate that? Okay, whatever, wave it through. So anyone that actually has Corona or whatever that's coming into Canada and they have it in a different language, you could just edit it, put in.
Well, I know, I don't know who you flew home with, but I flew with ANA and they looked at that thing like, they wanted it printed. I actually had to pull up the thing that said like an e-copy is okay before they let me on the flight. They were pretty hardcore about that.
Yeah, I just flashed my thing. Even in the Japanese airport when I got on, it was in Japanese, they didn't care. They just waved me through. My dad has cancer and he was all upset. He was like, how do they let you in so easy? That's why in Canada we're fucked right now.
Does your family respect you or do they think you're a fucker?
No, they respect me. They respect me. But I mean, I was making, because on top of comedy, I was also doing Japanese TV shows. I was in commercials. I was doing movies and dramas. So I was making really good money and I gave that up.
Right. And again, because you believe that being in North America is where it's at.
Even just that. I want to know, like, I've always loved comedy. It's always been in me. I grew up with SNL bouncing on my freaking uncle's knee and shit. Like, I loved comedy and I don't know.
One of your dreams to be a cast member on SNL?
I don't think it's possible. I don't think they'd take me over my 30s. don't know. I was listening to a bunch of people too, and they go, well, you know, if you get to LA too, all your chances go to crap if you're a dirty comic or whatever. But to me, it's not about getting anywhere. To me, it's just being the best you can be. But I didn't care about the money. I just want to have fun and grow. I felt
you want to be a dirty comic. Why do you like Joe Rogan though? If you want to be a dirty comic.
What do you mean?
Like who you like more, Joey Diaz or Joe Rogan?
To tell you the truth, like I like Joe Rogan as a person, and like his comedy is okay. But I mean, my main comedians that I love are like Sam Kinnison and
Sam Kinnison,
Richard Pryor, all those Comedy Store guys. I used to love Rodney Dangerfield back in the day too, but not as much one-liner guys as much anymore. I still love Rodney Dangerfield and Jimmy Carr and that, but I really like that style of Louis C.K. and who's the one guy? Oh, Bill Hicks and shit like that. Like those are my idols growing up or as I evolved as well. And I like that rare kind of like when you get on stage, you're you. If that makes sense.
Nope. So when are you going to be on the Joe Rogan Experience?
Oh, I don't know. I don't care. I might not, like when I came back to Canada, one of my biggest shocks too was just the PC culture. Because in Japan, like there was none of that shit. And ooh,
there's another one.
That sounded more like a gunshot.
It's crazy. I didn't realize that people ball out on fireworks so much during, you know, this holiday, right?
It wasn't there's really nothing here.
Montreal, but it was never like a holiday. Like
Nothing in BC. What was it saying? Oh yeah. So I come back and I'm looking at comedy in Vancouver and some of the shows that they're doing on Zoom now. And it's like they'll have one show and then they'll have an all female comedy thing. And then there's an all black comedian event.
You don't like that?
What?
I love theme shows, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I was in Shanghai, I brought in the Dirty Show. So that was just like really dirty stuff. We did, you know, a couple of all girl shows, which were awesome, right? Because, you know, sometimes for some comedy member, most comedians don't care. They just go to the club. For some people, they want to see themselves reflected. And like, you know, they go to, they might feel safe in an all-girls show. Or they want to go all, you know, black shows are usually awesome, right? Like sometimes you get these crazy ethnic shows and they can be really good. You know, I remember one of the first, we did a couple of Jew shows in Shanghai and we had like this, you know, the Jewish kids come out. Yeah. But the first one that we did at like the young Jewish community of Shanghai, the host, we got Mohammed, who's in Hong Kong right now to host the show, you know?
So I thought he was going to say the Quran.
You know, and I remember once we did the Jewish show and like, guy is really funny. Colin Hanna gets up and he's like, can you guys put in a good word with all your friends in Hollywood? You know, and his set bombed. But I don't see a problem with shows that like feature like a specific kind of comedian or, you know, I feel like if you're good, you're gonna get gigs.
Yeah. I was just well, now you're making me sound like I'm racist. No, but I just mean like I'd never seen it like that compact before, because it wasn't that it was like there was a black show and then a woman show. It was like, if you go to the Vancouver like Facebook page too, it's just like, wow, I don't see any regular gigs really.
Well, there,
I mean it's COVID, of course, but and then when I've never met any PC people, and then I met my first one, who was my stepdad's like niece, and she came to our house and we're sitting and talking. And my mom's talking about the reserve where the natives are here. And she goes, you can't say that. She's like, what do you mean? We call it a community now. She's like, one, I'm way fucking older than you and we've been calling it my whole life. And two, I've never even heard that term before. And she went off on my mom in her own house. And then I mentioned something like I had a 25-year-old girlfriend before, and she's like, oh my God, that's so much younger than you. That's gross. Oh, but then again, I have a 14-year older boyfriend, teehee. No, sorry, nothing. Just complete bashing. And I'm like, fuck, man, that shit exists.
All right, girlfriend, any prospects in Kanakistan? Any prospects right now?
Okay, you went there? No, nothing.
Are you doing a pandemic hinge? Like, are you just out there going like, are you scrolling during the pandemic? Because it's, you know, I talked to some Uber drivers and stuff, like people in Tokyo, in Toronto, and they say it's nonstop all night, straight up. It's just, everyone's just booty calling, super hardcore. People and just leaving their house in pajamas at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Everyone's like, there's a lot of like pent up demand, and there's a lot of just like scrolling. And there's a lot, apparently we've reached like peak, you know, peak nudes. Everyone's just sending a picture of their junk to each other.
Dude, like in Japan, I'm swiping and it'd be like fucking 30 out of 35 girls were super hot. And then I come back to Canada and like girls' Tinders are them naked, like peeing all over the side of the boat. I was like, this is what I went home to. Like, I don't know, man.
Miss Japanese women?
Oh, of course. Of course. I think once you go yellow, you can't go back to mellow. Yeah, I know. There's something about them, like personality-wise, that I connect to more. Like, a girl, can you imagine that? Like, oh, I don't know, but like, I could never have like a girlfriend now just like pissing off the side of the boat thinking it's cool and posting that on Facebook for the world to see.
I mean, I kind of like party with a lot of cool girls who would piss off the side of a boat. I definitely feel like.
Oh, and I'd love them and be friends with them, but I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I married a girl because I was in Asia, so yeah. I dated an Asian. But I feel like there's like cool, pretty people, you know. Everywhere.
Probably
some places have higher percentage, you know, where you just meet like more cool people.
Well, not in Penticton.
I mean, I bet there's some. I mean, how old are you? I bet there's some pent
single some mom. Girl going like this. Need the dick.
Come on, you should get on that, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's your biggest success story then in Japan?
Japan, I did it, man. I was a Japanese manzai comedian.
I'm talking about with women.
With women.
What's like your best? Like, oh my god, I can't believe I just.
Oh, I got my one story. I was saving that for a special one though. Okay, I'll drop it for you. Okay. So, have you ever been to a hostess club or a host club?
Not in Japan.
No, but you know what they are, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so for anyone listening that doesn't know, it's basically the host club is men that serve drinks to women and get paid for it just for talking and drinking with them. But anyway, so my one buddy was a big playboy in Japan, in Tokyo. He knew all the people, all the bars. He went drinking every night from like 7 till 7, 8 in the morning. He was a party dude. Everyone knew him. But he knew a lot of these hosts and hostesses, and he invited me out to the number one host. So they're all ranked like 1 to 500. He's the number one, best looking, whatever. And I get in there and he introduced me, hey, this is JJ. And he just, and blew me off. I was like, what a fucking prick. And we're talking, the guy's completely narcissistic. He's like, oh, my back hurts. I'm like, oh, what's wrong with you, man? And he's like, oh, I just fucked too many girls today, like 4 of them. And I'm like, you piece of shit, whatever. Anyways, we start drinking. Me and my buddy get, you know, we're having a good time. And this one beautiful hostess is there. And she calls us over and she's drunk as hell. And she's flirting and whatever. And my buddy, you know, I'm bad with women. I'm a shy guy when it comes down to it. I was martial arts since I was 6 years old. I was never a party guy until I came to Japan, really. Anyways, he goes, yeah, so you should go over to the bathroom with her, whatever. So I go with her to the bathroom and she goes in. And you know, you're supposed to go in with her. And I didn't. I pushed out and she came out. And then I was like, fuck it. I have to do this. My buddy he wingman me, man, with a beautiful girl. So she comes out, I make out with her. And then she pulls me in the bathroom and we just bang really hard. And she's so loud. We're on the second floor. The bathroom is the second floor of the club. And we bang in so loud. One of the guys from the club come in. So if the hosts have these hostesses as clients, they don't bang them because they're money for them.
Yes.
So he hears me banging her and he's like, Josh, your friend is leaving. I'm like, no, he wouldn't ditch me. So I continued, whatever. I finished up. I got out of the club and I was like, dude, I fucked up. My friend invites me to this big host party. they're millionaires. They're really good. Like they could be great friends, great networking, whatever. And I just banged their client and I was nervous as fuck. I go downstairs. They're all in a big circle surrounding the door. And I was like, I'm fucking dead. And then they just start clapping, like 50 people. And I'm like, what the fuck? And they're just like, oh, we heard her from the second floor, dude. You're great. And then all of a sudden he throws his arm around me and we drink till like 5 a.m. So I came down to a full applause by 50 people. And that was probably one of the craziest stories I had in Japan.
It's a bit unbelievable, but you know, I have a friend who has like a very similar story, you know?
Yeah.
A little benign. So yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun. I don't know, man, you're sitting around waiting for comedy. Someone's like, there's comedy going on in the US, they have vaccines. Someone offered you a job. Like, I don't understand why you're not already on a plane. Like, why don't you just hit me up from New York, like next week? I mean, you're already half packed. You're not doing comedy in BC. Mm. Comedy started again in New York. You have a job. Flights are cheap right now.
Well, I don't have a job yet. The guy was like, basically when it cools down and the UN opens up again, he can give me a job touring there, probably. It's, well, everything's on edge, man.
But good luck, man.
No, yeah. But I wanted to, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. I really wanted to learn more about you too, though, man.
I mean, so. I guess I'm sort of I might've just aged out. Who knows? We'll see. We're 50% vaccinated. I'd like, you know, if indoor comedy starts back up in the fall, I'd like to get back up. I'll start slow. I don't think it's been long enough that I don't think I'm going to pull any of my material. So I'll have to just start writing new and just build a new set, build a new 20 and see what happens. Right.
But you're going to stay in Toronto then?
Yeah. I mean, we bought a house here and stuff. I bought a car yesterday. Like it's crazy. Nice. Weird signing back into a country after such a long absence, you know, just like reacquiring your ID and like, you know, I'm almost through it and it's here. So I may be downtown. I may be out in the suburbs. If I'm out in the suburbs, then I'll just do, you know, I'll do shows out there from time to time. Hmm. But we'll see. So I'm looking forward to doing comedy again, but it's just going to be too difficult to put both feet in. Right.
Yeah.
I really do believe that if you want to be great at this, you need to be writing every single day, no exceptions, you know, and that you're up pretty much every night. And that if you're not up, it's not a day off. You feel uncomfortable.
How often did you write, actually? Out of curiosity.
I write when prompted. If it's a show that requires original writing, or if there's, you know, I write. And then I do a lot of my writing on walks, like walking the dog, and I just sort of stop and write notes. And another place that I write a lot is in between sets. Mm. It's a tough one because let's say like I'm in a gym that has one squat rack. There's like other people waiting for the thought rack, but then you have an idea that comes to you, like, as you know, in between a set, then you have to like stop, pull out your phone, write down notes. And like, people are like, what's going on, bro? So.
And are you more of a joke writer or are you more of a story writer? You kind of had a bit of both, right?
Stories need jokes.
Well, of course.
Jokes. I mean, stories are good because it's original material. It's hard to like, it's hard for someone else to come up with the same premise as your experience.
Yeah.
But you know, you got to be able to just make people laugh, and you got to have jokes that like work all the time that you open. It's hard to just walk in and open with a story. I've seen someone do it. I mean, here in Toronto, a really talented comedian. I saw him just come in and do like a 12-minute story on a 10-minute set. And like once he was in it, he was in it. There was no getting out of it. If it didn't hit right from the start, he was screwed. So, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'd like to mix, I guess, I suppose. I don't know. Sometimes you are forced to write and then you get your best material from it.
That's what I'm finding with me. Like I'll have 5-hour writing sessions and I'll just write and be like, holy shit, all my past shit was shit. Now it dawned on me, like joke structure comes to me slowly. And the more I write, the more I'm kind of figuring out. Like, I feel like all my previous stuff is just jack shit. I had to throw away so
much. That's the way you should always feel, right?
Yeah. That's what I love about comedy.
I feel like I've heard a lot of people say that. That is a fairly common refrain. Oh, so you're growing.
No, exactly. Like, what was it too? Like, a lot of advice Troy gave me. Oh, you still there? Got a red patch there.
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Okay. No, a lot of the advice you and Troy gave me, I listened and it hit me. But when I started writing it again, it like hit me like a brick. And I was like, oh, that's what he meant. Like, I get it now. Obviously, yeah, I need more time. And like people are telling me too, they're like, well, what's your plan and shit? And I'm like, oh, I need a year at least of going and hitting every open mic I can until I kind of find my groove. Like, I don't really feel that I even have my persona yet. You know what I mean? It's slowly just, everything's coming slow.
Awesome, man. Well, it's been a lot of fun. I got to get back to it. We should do this again sometime, man.
For sure. Thank you so much, man. And yeah, definitely. I feel you got a lot of cool stories too. And it was fun.
All right, man. Have a good one. See you soon. Good luck.
All right, there you are. All right, man. Yep. Thank you so much for being on and... yeah, let's do it again sometime. All right, man.
Cheers.
Cheers.